This is the one with homicidal mokapots,
delicious primordial soup,
and evil, evil croutons.
It's called the Crotons.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space, counting Daleks, Dalek, Ood, and the Cybertronic race. Santarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to C-047 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or DocPast.
that lovely ad-lib you heard comes from Ponkin.
That's me, hi.
Hey, how's it going? And I'm Nickel, how you guys doing? So a classic serial.
Yes, like, indeed.
In lots of, I mean, this one's complete, which is a great start.
And it's very short.
Incredibly short, mercifully. Means that we can watch these in good time without annoying all the people that we share our lives with.
Yes, that's true.
Which is great.
And presumably, slash hopefully, this is going to be a relatively short and snappy review, as it will be recorded and edited and dropped on the same day.
Ponkin's a machine, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? It's all show reverence. Hey, without further ado, I think we should jump straight in.
Sure. B-scale?
Let's do it.
B-scale. 3, 2, 1, and
time for us to synopsize,
blabify and summarize.
So take a pew
and grab a brew
and listen to this overview, this free-for-all we like to call
a bite-sized chunk of who.
Bite-sized chunk of who.
Doc and Jay-Z arrive on the planet of the Gonads, where the cleverest members of society are Logan's Rund to become companions of the titular Crotons.
We soon learn that these companions are merely drained of their mental energy and subsequently dispersed, i.e. disintegrated.
The Doc and Jay-Z, with their imperial forthrightness, campaign to break apart the long-standing traditions of the Gonads, and socio-political intrigue and genocide ensue.
Peace, cow over, you are welcome. Aren't you just? So, a few talking points. Do you have a particular one that you want to start off with?
I have a couple of directions I'd like to take things in, but go on, hit me with your talking points.
Okay, well, how about we start off by saying that approximately 50 times in the first two episodes, at the very least in the first two episodes, it is very clearly stated that Jamie is a simpleton. He is undereducated. He's a primitive. He cannot even wrap his medulla oblongata around the most basic concepts. And he is utterly useless to the Crotons.
Which seems like... It seems like it goes against a lot of what every time a companion is caught in new or classic Who, their usual worth is at least that they know who the Doctor is. That usually gets them like a pass. And then the rest of it, they might be clever. They might know things like, you know, like Zoe, like Martha in the future, that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Sure.
And then it's like, oh, okay, but you know who the Doctor is. Well, we'll keep you for a bargaining chip. They're like, nah, that's just...
Yeah, I mean, how many times do they say that he's useless? I wonder if this is in any way linked to the fact that he quit his job on the show in the last serial. Do you think so?
I don't think so. Having said that, since I knew that he'd quit on Invasion or during the filming for Invasion,
yeah,
at the end of the second episode, the cliffhanger, I literally thought they'd murdered him. I thought he was gone.
Oh, really?
Gone.
That this was the grand goodbye?
That was it. Well, because you know how things were back in the day. There was less lead time. Not everything has to die like Tennant, you know. That could have just been it, right?
Sure. But
especially if it was unamicable.
Yeah, but most of the farewells that we've had so far have been much better.
Have they all been amicable?
I mean, well, we had Katarina, who technically was a companion, whom the Doctor picked up in Troy, and who was an actual primitive, as if she was amazed by doorknobs. It was like, this godlike technology, what is this? She sacrifices herself, or at the very least is blown out an airlock and dies, and that's it. Like, there's no grand goodbye. There's just like, from one second to the next, she's blown out an airlock. But I feel like everyone else has had some kind of goodbye.
No, but that's what I'm saying. If Jamie, or the actor...
Fraser Hines.
If he'd left unamicably, then perhaps they would have just killed him and gone with it.
Yeah.
I had none of this knowledge, so I sat there in my kitchen while I was cooking, thinking, oh my god, that's how Jamie goes?
What about the other way around? What about, let's say, Fraser Hines had read the script for this serial and possibly for serials to come, and he just goes, oh, they treat me like an idiot. Like,
yeah, fuck this.
It turns out my character is an absolute moron. No, I quit this show.
Well, see, I mean, you'll have to cast a little bit of doubt over this, because on Wikipedia, they say that this serial is actually a last-minute replacement serial. But there is no citation for to what it was supposed to be replacing, or what production hiccup there was for Holmes' script to be inserted here. So I don't know. He probably didn't read. If that was true, then he wouldn't know this was coming.
It's possible.
Yeah, they just inserted loads of shitty quotes about Jamie.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it was palpable that he was secondary. Palpable that he was less useful. Because for a great swathe, they're like, are they just fucking off without him? Where is Jamie? And the doc at one point goes, "Oh, in the excitement, I totally forgot about Jamie." Your longest standing companion, man that saved your life countless times.
Do you know if he's going to be in many more episodes? I can't remember.
I have no idea. But I think I'm not going to read ahead, because that's the moment in the second at the end of the second episode was genuine. Like, I literally turned to my partner and
lost
fuck
Jamie.
Me, McCrinnan is dead. So who's McCrinnan?
McCrimmon.
Oh, whatever. I was so taken with grief.
We've now talked about how he's of no use to them and so on and so forth. Let's put that into the context and maybe tie that back to something that one of our listeners brought up in, what was this? Partners in Crime. That's what it was. I think this was Tracy, who said that on a number of occasions in Doctor Who, there... This is going to get dark. I'm sorry.
Are you going for the
I'm going for the brain rape.
Yeah.
So there are way too many occasions on Doctor Who where either people give birth against their will, or they indulge in some kind of sexual or procreational, let's say that, context without consent. And this, I feel, is one such case. Do you not?
I mean, I think that if you had some space and time to really think and draw the parallels, yes. I think broad strokes, what these people are doing are being converted into, you know, this ooze that generates crotons, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's birthing juice,
yeah,
is
yeah,
what it is.
It's birth juice, and that, or whatever you want to call it. And that's, I think that's a fair parallel. I think you'd probably have to go some way to develop the argument that this is all some form of brain rape. I don't know why.
Yeah, it is.
I guess so. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think you've got to spend a little more time to tie together all of the brain rape that happens in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
To make it a more coherent point. But there's something there, I'll grant you. There's something worth exploring or repressing.
Yeah, I suppose. But there, definitely when that came up, and I think possibly this is because now my eyes have been opened to this trope in Doctor Who, I couldn't get away from it every single time. And also the moment that you bring up, or that you brought up before you pressed record, the... lip smackingly good, where the doctor just dips his finger in the thing.
not to sound too quote unquote clever about this, but it's kind of a trope of storytelling ad infinitum, right? Like, how many Greek things, you know, how many things did Zeus impregnate?
Sure, no, I'm not saying, dude, I'm not saying that Doctor Who invented the trope
saying that we probably stumble across something that actually, if we interrogated quite a lot of different sides,
possibly,
you know, there's probably elements elsewhere.
I guess so.
Yeah. But no, Tracy was right. I think that's
some dark stuff.
I think that's dark. Moving on.
Yeah, please. All right.
So, again,
give me a topic.
Let's talk gonads. Let's talk the gonad, how their civilization works, why it works, how it is, structure of it. It's war gone. What were your thoughts on them?
So my thoughts are... In Doctor Who, we've had a number of scenarios where humanoids, the Gons aren't humans obviously, but they might as well be, where a humanoid species is enslaved, unknowingly enslaved by aliens. The first instance of the Macross springs to mind, where they seemed to be a fairly, you know, evolved society, but they didn't realize that they were just harvesting gas for the Macross. In this case, they're just harvesting intellectual power for the Crotons. But what I don't think that they did very well in portraying the gonads was, like, just pick a level of civilization. They all have matching axes. At one point, is it Zoe or someone goes like, we should have a laser? And they're like, is that better than an axe? Like, they're basically cavemen, but at the same time, they have a dude who mans computers. They are clever enough to use, like, digital IQ tests and shit.
Well, yes, actually, I'll pick up the mantle there.
Go for it.
I was, my sort of mental notes were, okay, you got gaps in your knowledge because you're fed certain bits of information. In fact, there are, within history, you know, people that have been enslaved have, you know, the control of information was a big part of that enslaving mechanism. So that sort of scans for me. What doesn't scan is the vast fucking, like, you know, humans and or humanoids or whatever with vague intuition will start to fill some of these gaps by themselves.
Yeah.
Not all, you know, whilst we stand on the shoulders of giants, some of these things were breakthroughs that people were just doing, like Alexander Fleming just, you know, in the mold, right? Like, some shit was just accidental.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel like they would have. So yeah, they're like their the axes. At one point, they talk about how their ancestors only had stones and I don't know sticks or something to fight the Crotons with. We have catapults. It's like to shoot stones. Is that where you're going with this?
Wait. He's not done yet. He may still impress us.
And they will fell the mightiest buildings. Like your buildings look rubbish, mate. Yeah, well,
you don't even live in buildings.
Molehills. What the fuck is this? I couldn't necessarily buy that. What I would have preferred is a much, like, it hadn't happened over thousands of years.
Yeah.
It would have happened over a short time, and they were more primitive than this.
That would have been, yeah, exactly. That would have kind of worked.
I would have also liked in the learning hall for the test not to be quite so, you know, like.
It seemed super advanced.
Seemed quite advanced. So what would be better is just.
It even flummoxed the doctorate first.
Yeah. So logic tests or something. Something where you don't necessarily have to know anything about. Do you know what I'm saying? Like some puzzles. If you can learn to do this Rubik's Cube, you're our guy, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
And a much more primitive society, but it just looks like they were lazy as shit. And I thought, how do we improve upon this axe? Why improve upon a classic? Yeah, it's like a cocktail suit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
why would you change something if it works? A little bit further down the line, I think this is one of my notes from from episode 3. I've made a note of there's no sight of who knows what. And this might kind of, I mean, it's kind of a parallel to what skills do they have as a people. In this case, what knowledge of the plot do they have as characters? So the examples that I've written down are, what's his face, Mitch's son. Oh, by the way, so the leader of the gonads, I've got him down as Mitch Buchanan. So what's his face, Mitch's son. He suddenly knows that Mitch is attacking the foundations of the Cretan ship.
He's like Sirius, Silas. Celery? Something like that. I'm telling you, man.
Okay. And then later on, Mitch's son's babe, can't remember her name now, she suddenly knows that Doc's making acid, although they shouldn't even have a fucking word for that. And this is all presented as though it's, well, obviously I know this. Oh, in this one scene, all I need is for Mitch Buchanan to go from room A to room B, so I suddenly have the knowledge of what's going on in room C, even though they've never been there. And doesn't that kind of tally with the whole structuring of the society? No one really ever decided who knows what skills do they have?
I mean, but then they've obviously organized themselves into some sort of council and then elected Celery.
No, they haven't. And that's also one of my notes here. There's no election process. They say that Mitch Buchanan, he is the leader of the gonads.
Celery.
His name is Celery. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the son.
No. Mitch Buchanan's name is Celerius.
To avoid confusion, you should refer to him as Celery. I will refer to him as Mitch Buchanan because otherwise I'm going to get super confused when I look at my notes.
That will avoid confusion. Everyone will know what we're talking about then.
Yeah. Hey, dude. I feel like we can expect a lot from Podcast Land. They've made it this far. They understand us. So at the very end... Okay, hang on. To clarify, there is no electoral process, and this is my final note of the entire episode. Everyone rejoices and declares that Mitch Buchanan's son will take the role as leader of the gonads.
Thara, his son.
Oh, right, okay. Thara. Well, maybe now's a good time to explore other, more democratic forms of government. Because they hammer in the fact that it's a hereditary role. In fact, the reason the other dude, what's his face, shouldn't be leading is because he's not tied by blood to Mitch Buchanan. And Mitch is still alive and kicking.
Yeah, I mean, quite clearly.
No one's been elected. I don't think there's a council.
The governance here is... But they do often talk about a council.
Really?
Which never convenes. Yeah, they talk about a council.
What?
I'm sure of it.
It seemed like Mitch Buchanan was the only elder of this entire tribe.
Unless, of course, I've made that shit up and just needed a form of governance. But I think there was supposed to be
a council. It's very possible that you remember this better than I do. I saw most of this on my phone.
Anyhow, yes. Yeah, the line of succession being somewhere between a regency monarch and, you know,
and
some council.
Total despot.
Yeah, I have no idea. it's all by proxy, isn't it? Because none of them rule anything.
Yeah.
They've been annexed.
Yeah, but I mean, everything is relative, right? Even after Mitch Buchanan realizes that he is the ruler of nothing, even at that point, he's happy to continue following the Croton's orders if it gives him relative power over his people, the gonads. You know, after they've completely identified the Crotons as murderers and the whole companionship with the Crotons as sacrifice. sacrifice. The second the Crotons go, Zoe Gond and Dr. Gond or whatever, they are now to be the new companions. Even then, does he go, well, we'd better continue so that we can, you know...
That's Elec, though, isn't it? Not Celery.
Who's Elec?
Elec is Celery's second in command, but then he's Starscream. If that makes any sense to
you. He's Starscream?
Looking at
Is it the Transformer?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, not really, but you know, that's his role.
Interesting.
Well, not quite Iago, but
he's the number one, but a sinister one.
He's the one that wants the throne.
Right.
And he's the one that ultimately tries to, I think it's Elec, that tries to throw Celery or gets Celery arrested or wants Celery arrested.
Gotcha. I know whom you're talking about. Do you know who plays him? I don't remember his name, but do you recognize him?
I don't know.
He was the guy wearing a flasher coat in the second Peter Cushing movie.
Oh, shit.
He's the guy. Yeah, the guy with a really creepy smile. It's like, yeah, yeah. Give me all your bracelets.
Fair play. Yeah, he was good, I thought.
I thought he was great, yeah.
Yeah. But yes, so as the gonads, and so other things, other hilarious ironies, their scientist is called Beta.
Oh, really?
how delicious of a fucking name. What happened if Scientist Alpha? He was too good.
Nope, no, no. Well, yeah, actually, that makes perfect sense.
He was sublime.
Yeah. Yeah, the Alpha has been sacrificed. What? So why were they even allowed to have a scientist? And what does this scientist do? I mean, like, what's the point of having a scientist?
Clearly not science, because, you know, he'd be engaged in the scientific method, you know, figuring stuff out, failing.
Yeah, not in this case.
Improved method.
Not in this case.
No.
It's like, no, we don't know anything about acids because we're not allowed to know anything about acids. The Crotons have specifically said you're not allowed to know anything about acids.
No chemistry. Well, biology's going to be tricky then.
No biology. So what does he do as a scientist?
I don't know.
He's more of a philosopher.
He's a porter. He just cleans beakers. That's all he does. I'm a scientist. Yes, you are, Beta.
Yes, well
done. Yeah, you're a big boy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, can we have a super quick chat? I'm really sorry. Can we please have a super quick chat about the outdoors? Like, what is the role of the outdoors? How is it perceived by the gonads? How is it re-perceived by the gonads? And what happens in the outdoors?
Now, so, I mean, it's significant because that's where the sacrifice is going to be sacrificed, right? They go into the machine and out of the machine and then sublime. If once they've figured out that they don't have a mental capacity, you know, they don't have...
Or once they've been drained.
Some shit. I don't know. One of those two things.
Yeah, exactly.
Go out, be murdered. And Doc and Jay-Z intervene from the outside.
Yeah.
Come into the city complex or whatever, then whatever you want to call it. They go back out again at free will and just like they're inside, they're outside, it's all good, right?
Yeah, it seems very, very clear that there are two exits, right? There's one that they came in from and then there's the other one which is where the sacrifices are let out of.
Yeah.
At no point over 1,000 years has a single gonad peeked around the corner. Or even, I mean, they say that the air is polluted and poisonous and like Doc and Jay-Z, they're clearly going to die because they were outside. It's not like they had to open a door to go in. There's not like an airlock. That same poisonous air is going straight into the shitty cave where the gonads live, right?
Yes.
And in fact, doesn't the scientist live in a house somewhere? Which is clearly not in a cave. Like, he lives in a house.
Maybe there's some subterranean tunnel, but yes, you're right. It's not, your city isn't airtight.
Yeah.
You know, setting up camp in Chernobyl with a really good tarp.
Yeah, exactly.
To fucking help, is it?
You don't even need a tarp. As long as you have to, you know, round a corner.
So you're just downwind.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah, that was some bullshit. But yeah, so the outside was left in that state because of a war with the Crotons.
Exactly. Which
happened 1,000 years ago or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. So at that point, presumably the gonads were more advanced?
No.
No?
Because they got slaughtered.
Yes, that's true, but... Oh, right. So they've basically... Here's the impression that I got.
Come.
I got the impression that outside, even though we don't necessarily get to see it, there was like this post-apocalyptic wasteland. At one point, the gonads were a normal civilization, fairly civilized, quite advanced, knowledgeable enough to have the word acid. And then at some point, the Crotons crash-landed, went shy-hulued on everyone, killed, you know, 90% of the population, popped 10% in a cave somewhere, or a cave system somewhere.
No, well, at least my impression was more that they... came to a less civilized version of the gonads, murdered
them. Oh,
and
they then built them up.
Then they built them up because they need higher brains.
Right.
So
okay.
They're doing this by giving them selective knowledge in an attempt to make them learn, come and drain them. But when they turned up, they only had clubs and whatever, because that's a reference from the fourth episode, I think.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well done. Nice one. That makes it much clearer. But all right, so returning to the outdoors, I loved that bit where you had one of the two Crotons walking around. You got the Croton vision where he's just walking around, the Croton POV, chasing down the Doc and Zoe.
Yeah.
Firing at the TARDIS, which automatically disappears.
Because of its hazard.
Hostile Action Displacement System. HADS.
HADS.
Which appears in, this is both from TARDIS Wiki and from one of our listener minis coming up. It appears in a new episode in Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that Matt Smith? I think it's Matt Smith and Clara.
Yes, and...
on a submarine with an ice warrior.
Yes.
Isn't it?
I think it is. It's absolutely that. On a Russian sub.
That's the one, yeah.
Yep. Okay, let's talk Crotons.
Okay.
Now, they are gorgeous.
They are. I love them.
They are beautiful.
I don't understand why they didn't replace the Daleks. They are so cool.
Obviously they're unwieldy and not elegant or whatever. But they're beautiful because they sort of crystallize, for me, is like that brand of automaton that came out of the 60s and 70s. That one that was in Lost in Space and later on in Logan's Run. Like that... menacing giant.
The hands, in fact, are identical to both.
Absolutely. I don't know. I thought it was gorgeous as an example of 60s robotic, you know, future.
The spinning head is fantastic as well.
Also great.
When that happens,
like a jewel.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, is it in episode 2 or episode 3? All of a sudden, the head starts spinning
really quickly.
I was freaking out. I was thinking, like, this is such an awesome effect.
I assume they just spun it a bit and then just sped it up. Yeah,
possibly. Well, regardless. Awesome. It's really beautiful. I mean, you say, yeah, they're unwieldy and so on and so forth. So are the Daleks, man. I mean, the Daleks, up until way, way later, can't even ascend stairs.
Yeah, but they're, in comparison, like, they're sleeker.
Yes, they are sleeker, but they also only have a plunger, whereas these dudes have claws that can actually pick up things. They don't have built-in weapons like the Daleks have. They have to pick up a laser cannon or whatever that is, that dispersion cannon, right?
Yeah.
I thought they looked really good. I wonder why they didn't catch on. They have to change, they have to tweak the character of the Crotons, but the look and feel of them, so to speak, great, I think.
Yeah, like I said, the fact that they can be dissolved by some malt vinegar is probably a weakness.
And not even that they get dissolved. They just, basically, they can never be killed because they will always just return to their most primitive states.
Yeah, that was cool. What I really did like is the technology side of things going into sort of a chemistry.
Yeah.
It was wicked. Rather than it all be technobabble.
Yeah.
Actually, the idea that these are elements, they reconstitute, they, you know, that was kind of cool. That was a new take on
I thought it was very cool, yeah.
Primordial soup and all that.
Fairly high concept sci-fi.
I thought so, right? Yeah. That was cool. The sulfuric acid solution.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, cool, that's simple, and we, you know, it's built up from the first or second episode where things like, it smells like sulfur, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, do you mean when Doc and Zoe are suddenly almost caught by one of the Crotons outside?
Yeah. Well, no, and Jamie actually says when they first materialize, it smells like sulfur.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
But the thing is that right at the end, he's like, but they're not entirely whatever that fucking substance is.
Yeah. And his comeback is, yeah, but the sulfuric acid wasn't 100% pure either.
No, yeah, he said that he'd put some stuff in it because, again, in the recipe, he gives to Beta. He says it's sulfur plus some other stuff.
Oh, really?
He's like, come on, man,
give us the dish out.
Fine with some sulfuric acid.
I didn't catch that at all. I thought that was simply him saying, "Well, it's not going to be 100% pure, is it? Because it was fashioned by goddamn caveman in clay hut."
No. He purposefully made it. It's one of those Sherlock Holmes moments where he's cleverer than everyone,
including the audience, and he's just not going to let on why. Right, I see.
But largely speaking, thought that was cool. I didn't really like the subplot or political subplot of gonads.
I thought there was too much of it.
Way too much.
I liked it. I quite like it when we have a little bit of, you know, something's happening in the slightly more primitive civilization internally. Mm. We had it with the Thal in the Daleks and in the first Cushing, obviously, the remake. And no, I quite like it, but I want to keep it at that level. Like with the Thal, you had the one Thal number 3, if memory serves, who was the chicken and who was ready to sell everyone out. And that's enough for me. I don't need any more. I don't need, like, oh, now Thal number three is leading a little militia to do this and everything's super repetitive, which I felt this was.
Yes. So, I mean, what's kind of lost me, because, yeah, it would have been better if there were Starker characters. So Celery, he's the...
Which one's Celery again?
He's Mitch Buchanan. Buchanan. Yeah.
Oh, right.
He's the leader of the Old Guard, the guy that has been preserving for the last, you know, the tradition of 1,000 years for serfdom, right? That's his deal.
Yeah.
And then when sort of...
do you ever get the feeling that he's everyone's dad? The way that you may get the feeling that what's her face? What's her face?
Thame.
Isn't it Varna?
Varna. Yeah, Thame is the dude. Is
right.
The son.
Okay. So the reason I say what's her name is that there is only one female gonad in the entire storyline.
That's true.
There's only one. So does that mean she's everyone's mother?
I think we're supposed to extrapolate.
There's rest of the society that we never get to encounter.
10-1, wasn't it?
Massive sausage fest. I love, by the way, that on her outfits, I mean, they all have great outfits, right? But the Gon chick, actually, I've written down Varna, she has a thong painted on her uniform.
Brilliant.
Yeah, screenshot on whobagman.com. Yeah. Those screenshots, by the way, slight tangent, all the slightly sleazy screenshots that I've added to that website, they bring in so many people.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's crazy the amount of perverts that accidentally tune into the show.
What a weird fucking distribution network that we founded for very, very, very specific.
To this day, I brought this up on the show before, but to this day, we get so many people who are looking for, they Google upskirts Vicky Doctor Who and they get to our website. I swear to God. It's amazing. Still to this day.
No way proud of that. That's awful.
From a sociological point of view, it's quite interesting, actually, to observe. Anyway, yeah, let's carry on.
Yeah, so with those guys and Celery and Thane and Starscream, also their idea of let's destabilize the Earth under it, under the machine, seemed a bit...
To what, sorry? Under the machine?
With the earthquake.
Oh, thing. Right, yeah.
So there...
The scene where what's-his-face gets a boulder on his gonads.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
his actual... Oh, super meta.
The idea was to remove the structures or whatever, the supports underneath the mock-a-pot machine.
Yeah. Isn't that quite clever, though?
It was quite clever, but then I thought, well, this thing is huge, and you guys are crap at everything.
Yeah, you're clearly not going to do a good job. but the original thought was pretty good, right? You got to give them a bit of a standing ovation for actually employing their matching axes in a relatively good way.
I guess. It's hard to take a Minecraft militia seriously.
Okay.
So, yeah, what about the burgeoning Doc and Zoe fest? Because, I mean, this was the Doc and Zoe show.
It really was. One of our listeners, S-Gamer, Steven, pointed out on Twitter.
You can't do this twice now. That's you done. You can't have it again.
He pointed out on Twitter that one of his favorite scenes, so correct, by the way, one of his favorite scenes, or according to him, one of the best scenes of this episode is in episode 2, in which... The doctor basically just tells her, he just jacks off her ego in telling her how clever she is and how she's the best ever, and she just shines. You could tell how her ego is just growing and growing. It's amazing. And they make a really good team, I think.
I really liked when Zoe was kicking his ass at this learning machine.
Yeah.
Because that's some shit that would not happen in New Who.
Where someone is better than the doctor.
Yeah. It slightly
it's actually quite novel to have the doctor fail at anything.
I liked it.
I agree. So did I. Normally, when the doctor fails at something, he hasn't actually failed. He's given us the impression of having failed, and then it turns out he was way cleverer than all of us, including us viewers, by having done something off screen.
Ocean's 11, baby.
Yes, exactly.
Every time. We actually made it out with the real timers. That's really lazy, by the way.
It is very lazy, but no, it totally works, and it is definitely a trope that we encounter. That is a trope that we encounter a lot in Doctor Who. You're right. This is a very new approach. In the same scene, I've made a note to say I love the scene in which the Doc is prepared to sacrifice himself for Zoe, and she doesn't give a damn. It's also really nicely written. Like, just as he sits down to use that machine, their tiny little banter session is really fun. Where he goes like, "No, go away. No, come back. What am I doing here? Actually, I already know." Like, that back and forth is really fun.
Yeah, that was good. And I don't know, the high brains part was kind of good. It was very much the, here's Dr. Zoe. Oh, yeah, Jamie's over here.
Oh, yeah. You know, for the longest time, I thought they were saying hybrids.
High brains.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that until episode 3 or something. But yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of the Crotons' plan?
It's pretty dumb, isn't it?
Pretty shit plan.
It's pretty shit. There are only 2 of them. They need 4 super brains, basically, to power the ship. They threaten the remaining 2, who are, as far as they know, the only other 2 they will ever receive, with death.
Now, if me and you crash landed on a planet,
yeah,
we could live forever, so that's cool.
Sure.
And we need 2 other people just like us.
Yeah. Why would you deliberately feed this population a tiny little bit of knowledge at a time, rather than just get, let's say, 10 people and feed them tons of information and 2 of them will survive our experiments and we'll use them as engine fuel?
That's one. Bingo. Much better plan. My plan would be, why don't we use our sophisticated intellect
to build a new engine that doesn't require 4 brains?
Or signal some other people.
Ah, but it seemed as though they needed 4 brains for that as well. Or at the very least, at the end, okay, you'll know this, I will have missed this on my phone. Do they not actually send a signal to their, what do they say, not their galaxy, to their something?
A fleet, because they're part of a fleet.
Possibly. Something to that effect.
I don't remember that specifically. But my point generally being is that there's got to be some options here,
yeah,
rather than let's raise a civilization for the next millennia. Because when we get home, they're not going to be running any of your favorite TV shows.
Yeah.
Crotons will have moved on.
Okay, I've got a question for you. When they get Doc and Zoe's brains to impregnate their birthing sludge and a Croton grows out of it, does only one Croton grow out of it, or do both the Crotons that we see grow out of it?
I think both.
So that means that for 1,000 years, those Crotons have basically been in hibernation, right? Like, they've returned to their ooze form, and the whole show has been run by their computer.
Now, I was unclear here. I assumed it was the disembodied, like these Crotons could still interact with their technology without being fully fledged Crotons.
Oh, really?
Well, because they talk to them, don't they?
Yeah, that definitely seemed like a recording, though, didn't it? I feel like the Gonads even say that it's a recorded voice at some point.
Maybe they do.
Which, by the way, why do they have a concept of a recorded voice?
Yeah, but they pick particular Gonads, don't they?
Yeah, they pick the cleverest ones.
By name?
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, like the Croton computer and the one-eyed Croton snake and the whatever, like they've set up camp, they've disseminated these IQ test machines, and they basically just go, take these tests regularly, and whoever scores the highest, you're going to be companions of the Crotons.
Okay, well, let's say that this was the case. Let's say that the whole show's been run by the computer,
yeah,
and these lot of sludge just waiting to be reanimated,
right? I think that's the case.
Let's say that's the case.
Go for it.
Who murdered everyone to begin with?
Computer.
Computer murdered everyone.
I think so. I think it's the same, not the Croton snake thingy. Not that, but you know when in episode...
The Mockabot, the like stationary one.
I'm thinking of the one that looks like a mini UFO that's sort of spinning and floating above them with a light. The thing that's shining a light on...
The Pyrex bowl.
Yes, exactly. That's just flash lighting. It's not a verb. Jamie at the end of episode 3.
Yes. Yeah, okay. All right. That could be interesting, but...
Isn't he meant to?
No, so there's more to it.
Yeah, okay.
Because the Gonads do talk about metal men coming from the sky.
Plural. Just 2 of them. Oh, yeah. Well, okay, hang on. So don't we also get the Croton... Oh, really sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We should know this. So don't the Crotons say at some point towards the end, actually at the very end, don't they tell Doc and Zoe that, listen up, chaperoons, 4 of us crash landed, 2 of us, as in this spaceship, 2 of us didn't survive the crash.
Mm.
My buddy and I, we killed a bunch of people and then we went into hibernation.
Okay, that was it. Then that makes much more sense as an idea. Because if they'd all, if they needed someone to reanimate them from hibernation,
yeah,
then
long story short, I agree with you. It's a bullshit plan.
Yeah, it's not the world's best plan. I feel like there are options there, guys. Bill and Ben.
Bill and Ben.
Yeah.
So one item of Croton interaction that really highlights how dumb they are at the core is that bit where one of the Crotons has fired on the TARDIS and Doc and Zoe are hiding somewhere. And the Croton suddenly goes, direction point? Like, direction point? I don't know where I'm going. And the other Croton on the radio literally goes, reverse the readings, i.e., go back the way you came from, you cretin.
I don't understand why that thing didn't, like, when Jamie tried shooting them, it didn't work out better.
Oh, yeah. And Actually, what happens in that scene? Does Jamie... I thought he bought it in that scene. As in, like, obviously, I didn't think that he really bought it, but I thought that he very well could have.
They keep him alive. They say so.
But and for
then
what
they,
reason?
Then they, well, because they then say, oh, he's a value because he could find out where they are. Where are the two high brains? Then he says, you're breaking my arm.
Okay.
And they say, don't harm him. And then he's talking... He tells them what the TARDIS is.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, again... So he tells them what the TARDIS is, and they say, how does it work? What's the, you know, primary, whatever it is, you know, vector?
Yeah. Thing or
and he says he doesn't know, but then they feign no interest in it and basically want to go destroy it, or destroy them, capture the high brains, destroy the thing. It's like, you could use that ship.
This is super good points. You don't know what it is. In fact, they don't seem to be very interested in the whole time travel aspect of it either.
Oh, it travels in time and space.
Oh.
Oh.
How fast?
Does it look like a bowl? Not interested. Unless it looks like some sort of kitchen utensil. It's not our bag. They just, yeah, that's such a fucking giant. Because every other fucking villain really cares.
Yeah, everyone goes, wait, what? I can use that for my own nefarious purposes.
Space-time Ferrari, you say? Yeah,
yeah,
that's some bullshit.
Absolutely. And in fact, like, okay, so wait, we need, let's say for a second that they don't believe that it's a time machine. Maybe they think Jamie's just a primitive and to him going from point A to point B is the same as going through time.
It sort of is.
Sure. But they need another two brains to just go into space. I mean, they don't, in the long run, now that they're up and about, they don't actually give a shit about the gonads. They just want to leave, right? They want to go home.
Yeah.
Here's another spacecraft that clearly works.
Yes.
Just hijack it.
And go to wherever your thing is.
Or just ask, can we get a lift with you dudes?
We'll stop murdering.
Yeah, this has all been a huge misunderstanding. Can we jump in with some sound bites? We haven't had any sound bites yet in this episode.
Can you hear me?
Okay, I've only got two sound bites, and they are both Doctor lines. One is...
Great jumping gobstoppers, what's that?
Nice.
Which
that,
is great.
That thing reminded me of the Flight of the Navigator.
Oh, really?
For that film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I haven't seen that in ages.
Compliant. Yeah, anyway.
And the second one, actually quite similar line, is in episode 3 when the Doc and Zoe exit the TARDIS sporting a Tesco shopping bag and flaunting leg, respectively, and the Doc goes,
oh my giddy aunt.
Yeah, you never heard that one?
Yeah, yeah, I have. Yeah. But twice in the same serial, the Doctor just has these really weird, weird lines.
I completely gloss over giddy aunt because I say that at least 5 times a day.
Oh, really?
Oh, my giddy aunt. Yeah.
No, I don't. Yeah, all right.
Work that into your vocabulary.
I will.
Well, I think then that's probably all the major talking points of this serial.
Yeah,
let's,
pretty much.
Let's jump into some reviews.
Let's do it. Do ba 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 dibbidi beep beep boop boop ba. And now it is time to rate this.
Did we love or hate this?
Bing bong bing bong hey hey la 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 la.
Ratings.
Keeping it very, very brief. I thought some of the ideas in this episode were revolutionary. I love the way that the Crotons activate, deactivate, procreate, etc. I thought that was very clever. And I liked a lot of the goings on with the gonads as well, even though we've already discussed this, way too much of their internal politics was put on screen. What I do think didn't do very well, not for me anyway, was the dialogue, especially in the first couple of episodes. I thought it was very repetitious. In fact, I made a note to say that in episode 1, on 3 occasions do they say, quote, verbatim, no one's seen them for thousands of years. Like, just that one line is repeated thrice, and it just seems like very lazy writing. However, I thought the Crotons were great. I thought they were pretty awesome, and I will very happily rewatch this at some point. I'd quite like the Crotons to return for New Who, so I'm going to give this 2.9.
Ooh, yeah. I like it. Okay, then from my point of view, I actually quite liked this serial. I thought it was very well paced, and I thought that, like you said, some of those themes were very interesting. The thing that I think was missing for me was those 1,000 years, is that there wasn't much in the way of explanation as to what happened, why they were benefactors, what material benefits were being produced, because I think that would have made the depth of the conundrum more more interesting if they were like, oh, we've been given modern medicine and actually they've given us food and stuff and actually we don't want to rock this fucking boat, thank you very much, Doctor. And that would have been more compelling for me.
That's true. Oh,
they
sorry,
sort of allude to it, but nothing concrete.
That's a very good point. I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but actually something that we didn't discuss is they never leave their little cave system, right? They never go outside. They haven't for 1,000 years. So literally everything that they eat, everything that they consume must come from the Crotons.
Which would have been cool to see. Because like I said, then you are biting the hand that feeds you, literally, by this revolution. And it would have made it more complex.
Sure.
And all of that sort of
stuff. But now they also know that they can exit.
Yeah, but either way, if you knew that the last 1,000 years worth of your infrastructure, you know, everything around you, and we as an audience got to see it a little bit, I would have been more sympathetic to the plight of let's not rock the fucking boat. You know,
good point.
Like any revolution, I guess. But you know, I thought the doc was great. And Zoe, I like that their little twosome. Jamie to the side, which I love a bit of Jamie, but you know, his sidelining didn't really do much for me. Anyway, this all culminates into a rating of 2.7.
Oh, okay, nice one.
Strong.
We also have some listener minis. Let's jump into listener mini land.
Listener minis.
So we have three listener minis, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, we do.
Two of them that's very helpfully stuck to our little 250 prices.
Thank you very much, chaps.
But one has, you know, cannot help himself. Mr. Trenton Bless.
Hey, Trenton.
Read this in its full splendor, as always, but we've selected what we think are the salient 250
words.
Or the essence.
More
of
or less.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, check out the rest on whobackwhen.com.
So, Trenton says, for the Crotons themselves, while they do look like they were a ripoff of the robot from Lost in Space, nice, they look so bad that the myth arose that they were designed for it in a Blue Beta contest. And if your monster looks like a Blue Beta design, then you might have done something wrong. Hey, you leave Blue Beta alone, Trenton. That is a national institution.
Yeah, and that's how we got the beauty of the Absorbaloff. Thank you very much.
And they were defeated so simply. Poison their water tank is all the doctor had to do, but I'll give them one thing, that when their heads spin, it does look kind of cool from a 60s perspective, and their build-up was fantastic. Roy Skeleton does great voice work, as always.
Trending goes on, as for our main cast and guest cast, they were fairly average. The Doctor and Zoe were maybe the highlight of the serial. Fraser Hines is outstanding as Jamie, getting a surprisingly rare hand fight, and lots of moments to himself, very true. Despite his antipathy, Hines sells his interaction with his ridiculous captors, the Crotons. Most of the Gons are great, but their leader was possibly the worst of the lot.
The serial did achieve the highest amount of viewers for a Troughton serial, as it was around Christmas when it was being aired. I did not know that. And it may have had also had to do with the previous serial's massive scale. The serial still suffers from so much, which really drags it down. It may have gotten views, but the serial just tastes like a stale Christmas turkey.
Aww.
So I'm giving it a 2.7 out of 5. The serial was okay, but it wasn't anything special.
No, I really wanted another decimal point there. Awesome mini review. As we said, this is but a part of it. Read the untruncated version online. I agree with most of what he's said, to be honest. Though I think poisoning them by pouring acid into a tank that feeds via basically an umbilical cord. Do you remember this? And their uniform, like, feeds straight into one of the Crotons. I think that is savage. I think that is massively heinous. And actually something that would kill most people. If you want to say hi to Trenton, go for it. You can find him on Twitter. He is at Trenton Bless.
Well, our next mini comes from Peter Zed. He's also submitted a maxi, which you can see online, but helpfully he's cut down his own pricey.
Yep.
The Crotons is a simple story with some interesting concepts. The robots themselves were a favourite of a younger me. The gemstone-shaped heads that spin were fascinating. The technology explored in the story is rather unique on so many levels, and there are quite a few role reversals for our human perception of life. Robots are grown, not built, while humans are programmed with their intelligence, and are discarded when their usefulness is in an end.
Interesting that in contrast to other stories, Peter Zed goes on, the Doctor could help the Crotons go home with no further violence, yet he chooses to destroy them instead. Sadly, his motives for this change in character are never explored. This is perhaps the biggest problem here. In the end, there's just too much unexplored, too much unexplained, too much that could have been. As a result, the audience can't connect on the level they should.
Retro rewrite time. Eliminate the Gond infighting over how to stage a revolution. It does nothing for the plot. Mm-hmm. Instead, place more emphasis on the internal and personal conflicts that the strange culture that must have grown out of such a society and the technological gaps between the two races. I would love to see the Crotons explored in a modern Who episode. The series only scratches at the surface of what could have been something much larger, and more depth is what's really missing. Overall, the Crotons does have a rewatchability, but there are other episodes I'd watch first. I give it a Dinotropic 3.1. Thank you very much.
And he signed it, Bina Zudish Gond.
Very good.
Very nice one. Thank you very much, Peter. He said exactly what you said. That's totes malotes on the money. Well done, Peter. Absolutely agree with that. I would have liked to see more about the more of their society as well. I do think, however, about the doctor's motivation at the end not to let them go home. I think at that point, it's like, well, you've already threatened to kill me and my companion over here, and you kidnapped and nearly killed my other companion back there in the cave. Yeah, we're going to throw acid in your food.
Yeah. And also, he can't be necessarily sure that they would leave peacefully.
No, that's true. But that was sort of my point earlier. If they had just asked him, maybe he would have.
Maybe.
You know? Anyway, awesome. Thank you very much for sending in your mini, Peter. And then we have one more listener mini. This one comes from Stephen. Can I sing it?
Oh, of course you can.
Stephen.
How you doing, Steve?
Hey, man.
So, Steve writes, the opening of the serial made me wonder if the word companion had entered the Whovian lexicon by this time. It's actually a bit jarring to hear companion of the Crotons bandied about, given what the word companion would eventually come to mean to every Whovian.
He goes on, I've commented before in episodes like The Macra Terror about times where the local civilization unquestioningly obeys an unseen force that gives them commands. It's actually refreshing to see the Gons questioning this early on and having a very simple reason to obey. The Crotons will kill them if they don't.
Like the Quarks before them, the Crotons were an attempt to replace the Daleks that never went anywhere. Still, they weren't bad as a one-shot villain. My main issue is that they seemed more like robots, talking of procedure and functioning, than the non-organic life forms that they were advertised as. That and the loud blaring noise that followed their robo-eye.
I quite like the robot either. He goes on, I feel Jamie didn't get a lot to do in this story and wonder if his badassery in episode one is meant to make up for that or make it less obvious.
The scene that most stood out for me is in episode two when Zoe completes her test at the highest score ever and she has this super smug grin on her face. As the doctor explains she's a genius. Perhaps my favourite Zoe moment.
Yeah, this is the scene that I mentioned, the scene that he brought up on Twitter as well. Very, very nice one, Stephen. And he concludes, I feel the episode falls into good but not great territory and ultimately rate it at a 3.1.
Oh, damn.
Wow. That's actually a pretty good rating. Yeah. Oh, and he adds a little PS, bringing up that HADS, HADS, also appeared in Cold War. Correct? Yeah, it did. Yeah. Very nice. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to high-five Stephen online, yes, you can. I'm glad you asked. Go to Twitter. He is at SGamer82. That is 82, the number. Raiderunian cheesecakes. I think that pretty much does it for this episode of Who Back When. Join us next time for Classic. It's going to be The Seeds of Death. For New Who, it's going to be
Fires of Pompeii.
And for Audio Who, goodness knows when that'll be. It's still the Cannibalists. In the meantime, you can say hi to us as well. Nick is found at Nicolele, is that correct?
That's right.
And I'm at Ponkin, you know how to spell that. So high five us online, we will high five you right back. Thank you so much for listening. Be rad and excellent to each other. And cha-chao.
Bye. Kablamo.
Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's at Who Back When, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?